Flyers Daily with Jason Mertidis.
It is a brand new episode of Flyers Daily. We're on the road. We are at the shore. It's beautiful. It's beach weather, but it's getting close to being hockey weather. Well, not really. Flyers Daily, as always, presented by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. It is a Monday edition. The episodes may be a little shorter this week as we get our last vacation in before the grind of a season comes. We are in the month of August, and joining us from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com, it is Bill Meltzer. Bill, I know your kids are going back to school soon. We're getting closer to that time of year when the pucks will start hitting the ice in earnest.
For sure. And you know, even in Voorhees, you have more players in August start drifting in to commence their workouts before camp starts. And usually, you know, as you get towards the end of the month, yeah, you have a good bit of the team already there working. And there are guys that have been there all summer. So, slowly but surely, it's drawing a little bit closer.
Bill, I kind of just touch on some ideas. I was sitting on the beach today, just kind of thinking about some questions I have in my head, kind of some random streams of consciousness. But first and foremost, you know, speaking of guys that are at the practice facility, I see Miechkov is there and Tyson Forster, Joel Farabee, Cam York, who, by the way, looks even bigger this year and really looks like he's hitting the gym in a big way. But are you a little surprised at how thick Miechkov is? He looks very more, you know, he doesn't look like he's built like a 19-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, especially for a guy who really didn't hit the gym until 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because before that, all his training was on the ice. He you know, a couple of years ago, he realized he'd have to work in a gym routine whenever. And I think he's just going to be one of those guys going to be a workaholic and just everything he can do to make himself as ready as possible to play hockey, whether it's in the gym, on the ice, he's going to be one of those guys. Yeah, because you look at him and low center of gravity. Yeah. And he looks like, you know, he looks so much stronger than he did even a year ago. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I look back like at the pictures of him the night he was drafted to now, and he just looks so much thicker and kind of solid. You know, one of the things that was talked about this week I saw on social media, Bill, was a bit about him being maybe being a center. And I looked at that. I really thought about that. Okay, yeah, that's a huge organizational need. But I don't want to just push a guy to the need because I want to fill the need. I just think, in my opinion, Bill, when I look at it, I just don't see it. I don't see center with him. Granted, I haven't seen him play a ton, and we'll see what he is at the NHL level. And certainly, right out of the gate, I'm not moving him into the middle of the ice. I just see a guy, when I look at him, I go, I see a player that would be much more dangerous working outside to in than playing up the middle. And I'm not going to just shove him there because that's an organizational need. I'll have to fill that need, no doubt about it. But I'm not going to use my most prolific offensive weapon in a way that I think I just think his body type, his creativity, his vision, his ability to play in small areas out of the corner and behind the net, to me, doesn't look like a center. It looks like a winger to me.
Yeah, and remember a year ago, while he was still with Ska, they experimented with him at center during the preseason.
Yeah.
And, he picked up some points, and he's always going to get his points. It's against KHL competition, but definitely had a ton to learn on defensive responsibilities of a center. I think he can play any position and succeed at it. But I agree that he's naturally a winger. And so, you know, play him where I think he'd be the most effective, which I think is on right wing. When he played center, mind you, it was a very short period of time in a preseason, but he was very oriented to setting guys up, and he can do that too. But I want him scoring. He's a goal scorer.
Yeah. So, that's the harder feat, to score the goals as opposed to set them up.
Yeah. I mean, you need both kinds of players on your team, but a guy who's a natural finisher, keep him where he is and, you know, find a center that works for him, you know, whether it's Frost or whoever it'll be this year or and beyond. I think you make him the best winger that he can be, and then you find line mates to work with him. Yeah, long term, yeah, absolutely. You do need that top end center to be a contending team, but I don't think you force him to play a different position because it's a team need as opposed to where he fits the best, and you find other pieces that work.
I think there's a notion, Bill, that your best forward needs to be a center,
yeah.
and that's just not true. I don't think that's the case. The Tampa Bay Lightning's best forward is Nikita Kucherov. The Rangers' best forward is Artemi Panarin. Now, they don't have this huge need at center, so you don't hear the same, well, they got to move Panarin to the middle because he's their best forward. No. To me, I look at him and go, I just want to maximize this guy's skill set. And I think that's on the wing. And that's okay. My best forward can be a winger. He doesn't have to be a center.
Yeah. Sure.
That's an old traditional hockey type thing to think about.
Yeah. But look at Patrick Kane all those years with Chicago. And yeah. he played a little bit of center too. But yeah. He made the biggest difference on the wing. And I think Michkov's going to be another guy who's going to be like that.
And what did Kane do, Bill, that was so great? It's when he moved off the wing into the middle of the ice and he created decisions, he just made the right decisions when the opposition kind of had to choose on what they were going to give him and what they were going to take away. That's why he was great. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. I saw that kind of being bantied about, being talked about, and I just didn't buy it. Another thing, Bill, Danny Briere mentioned in – I think it was the Michkov introductory press conference. He mentioned Hathaway and Delarier and how Delarier would be one of Michkov's best friends, right? Because he'd be a protector of Matvei Michkov. There's going to be guys around the league that try and take liberties on a young player that's got a tremendous ceiling of talent and he's just first getting into the league. People are going to see what they can get away with. But I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about Nick Delarier, and I'm going, okay, who's coming out?
Yeah.
Who, if Nick Delarier is coming in, who's coming out of the lineup? I just don't see a spot for Nick. And I like Nick Delarier. And I think there is a place for him and what he does on occasion. But I got to tell you, I don't know who comes out of the lineup to get him in it.
Yeah. And we talked earlier this summer about Bobby Brink. And mm-hmm. I don't want them messing with Brink. I want Brink in the lineup, you know, It'll be a top nine role with some power play time. They had Brink a little bit in the fourth line a little bit last year. That's really not where he belongs. So yeah, you're gonna, as long as your lineup is healthy, you're good. You're gonna get to 12 pretty quickly, you know. So I don't know where there's a role for Nick to be an everyday player at this point either. Again, but barring some kind of injury, certain matchups or whatever, you know, like. You're against New York and they're dressing rampy. Well, I would assume Delorier might be in the lineup that game, right?
But yeah.
I don't see Nick playing every day. And again, I don't want it to be the expense of a young skill player.
So. I see a guy like Garnet Hathaway and I go, okay, that's a guy that has some more finish to his game, more refinement, more skill, can still skate and hold the opposition accountable. He's not going to drop the mitts as much as Delorier is. But, you know, like you said, if there's a Rempe in the lineup or a Ryan Reeves or, you know, okay, then maybe I go a little heavier than normal. But I got to be really careful who I pull out of the lineup. Here's the thing, Bill. There's question marks on some guys, and I don't think this yo-yo effect of them in and out of the lineup serves a couple of purposes a whole heck of a lot. And I'm going to talk about Morgan Frost with this too.
Yeah.
To me, the Flyers got to go into this season saying, if Morgan is healthy for 82 games, Morgan is in the lineup for 82 games. Because I can't go with this yo-yo anymore and just pull him out of the lineup. It's either he's going to be an 82-game player for us, or we cannot diminish his trade value, and he's got to, and we got to move him. Because this is now getting to the point of, okay, the hard lessons have been there, and I understand the accountability, and it's no one's immune. But to me, the approach coming into this season with Morgan Frost and Bobby Brink, to some degree, has got to be an 82-game season, and not 69.
No, I completely agree with that. You know, season before last, he dressed in 81 of the 82 games. The only time he was scratched
Toronto.
In Toronto, in front of his family. But, you know, he was up and down the lineup, and he spent that a stretch in November. I think it was about 3 weeks. It was the last game of October, to the last third or so of November, and he was playing with Zach McEwen. He was playing with Nick. You know, those aren't the right line mates. It's not the right lineup spot for him. And then when they put him with JVR and with Tippett, that point to the end of the season, he led the team in scoring. Now, you know, that was because Konechny missed time, but still led the team in scoring. This past year, they stopped yo-yoing him in and out of the lineup. Had the talk with Tortorella, and it was right before that game against Calgary. I think it was January the 6th was the game. He led the team in scoring again until the final 10 games. And then everybody of the team struggled the final 10 games, including Frost and many others. But, you know, Morgan kind of dropped off. And again, his ice time went down, too, because they were giving Paling more ice time. They were giving, you know, Hathaway more ice time. And so he was one of the guys whose ice time went down during that period of time. But I think that particularly, you know, whether you're going to sign him to a new contract because he's restricted at the end of next year, and he's starting to come up when unrestricted free agency is in sight. So the next contract either walks him right into it, or you move him.
Yeah.
Or if he has a bad year, you know, that's not good for him, not good for the team. Then you're wondering, what do we qualify, or just let him get a fresh start someplace else? But for trade value, for this is the year he has to take the next step. I think Morgan has to consistently be in your top six. Second line is fine, and power play time, and he's one of the. And he had 10 power play points on a lousy power play this past year, so to me, this is the year where he has to really take that bigger bite and be that guy this year. If not, then you move on, whatever the next steps are. But I completely agree that he has to be a guy who you have him in the lineup as long as he's healthy and used in a role where he's being put in position to succeed. And that's not just Frost. That goes for any young player, really, or player he's mid-20s now. But if you put them in position to succeed, and it was something actually that Fred Shiro used to say. It was a Fred Shiro quote that if I don't use a player right and he doesn't succeed, that's on me. If I put him in position to succeed and he doesn't, that's on him.
Yep.
And I think that's as true now as it was when Fred Shiro said it.
No question. Which leads me to another player, Billy. You know, Frost, top six, you mentioned those things. This player likely falls in the bottom six. But down year last year, he dealt with an injury. But where does Noah Cates fit in right now? Is he a fourth liner?
I think Noah Cates' perfect role, I like him better as a winger than as a center, only because he'll give you more offense as a winger than he will as a center. Well, you know, when he plays center, he focuses a lot more on the checking side of his game, and he's good at it, right? He's a good defender.
Plays really deep in his own zone.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I like him as the F1. He's a very good forechecker. He'll win a ton of battles up ice
because of the stick on puck too.
Yeah, and he'll get to the net. As he's actually not a bad PP2 guy. You know, he'll go to the net and bag some goals that way. So I really like to see him, you know, as a third line winger. I think that's a good spot for him, particularly, you know, because you have Paling, you still have Lawton, and we talked about the redundancy effect. You know, it's great to have two way players, but I think you want to have some variation in your lineup. So I think Cates is a winger, and I like to see him, and you can move him up or down given, you know, in a given game. One thing that John Tortorella definitely does is he does have a feel for who's going on that night. So maybe you move him up that night, or maybe drops down a line that night. But to me, I think that middle six and the third line is really a sweet spot. And again, more wing than center.
Yeah, I think there is more offense there as a winger as well. And if that is the case, then I think if there's a third line player, you know, a winger, it's not unheard of for a winger to be good defensively too. Like, that's okay.
Sure.
And he's always going to have that element no matter. I mean, you could play him on Neptune. He would have good defensive instincts. Another thought that crossed my mind as I was chilling looking at the waves and on the beach today, Bill, is, you know, last year, last season, every year's got curveballs that are thrown at you. Maybe 2 years ago was the year that, you know, a player like Noah Cates was kind of the curveball with how well he adapted defending at the center position. Got a couple Selke votes, actually. But last year, the player that really kind of shocked me and in a very positive way was Cam York. We've talked about it quite a bit. And I thought about that, about the jump that he made in his development. Then I thought about another player that's had a very similar path to the NHL as him. He was a first-round pick, didn't make the team out of camp, was a call-up, had some initial success, and then in the same period of when this player is entering the season that Cam York entered last year, this year. And that's Tyson Forster. Can he make that kind of Cam York, totally different position, totally different set of responsibilities, but I feel like this is Forster's entering the year that Cam York had last year, and to me with a very similar feel. There was core elements of York's game that we liked, but he needed to show that he was more of a killer and a competitor. We've seen those things out of Forster. He's better defending than we thought, harder on the wall, stronger. We now need to see the things that we thought he was going to be, which is the shooter and the finisher. Could we be going into the season and that guy be the Cam York of last year, Tyson Forster be that this season?
I think that's very much in his reach. You know, he's
the most likely candidate, right?
Yeah, I think so. He had 20 goals as a rookie, and yep. It kind of snuck up on you. His 20 goals because he really struggled to score the first quarter of the season.
Bill, he couldn't throw it in the ocean the first 18 games.
Exactly. I think he was stuck on one goal until the home and home with the Penguins, and then he went a nice run, and had another dry spell, and then another really nice run. That was the latter part of February going into the stretch. And then, you know, like everybody else, his final 10 games were rough. I mean, at least offensively, the goals dried up. But I would not be surprised at all if Forster goes from 20 goals this year to 26, 27 this year. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe even as he continues to develop, even more, a 30-goal guy. He has it in him. He has the big shot. He wins a ton of battles.
If he can pick up three or four goals on the power play, he can be a 30-32.
Yeah. If you could, you know, if he – because he can – you know he can score from the flank.
Yeah.
One of the areas they score a ton of goals is like the top of the circle, top of the on his off wing. So – we know. I think that there are more goals there for him that way, and you know, as he started picking up towards the end, towards the latter February, March, early March stretch, he was scoring some deflection goals too. He can, you know, he has really good hands. So there's no reason why he can't go from an even 20 to the, you know, the higher end of the 20s, and again, maybe even eventually even more. To me, I think he can take that jump of 5-6 goals. This is the year we really would like to see Tippett go from the upper 20s somewhere into the 30s. He could do that. And we talked about Frost earlier. He only had 13 goals last year. His assists were up, but he only had 13 goals. But the year before, they had 19 goals. Yeah. And not
Farabee for this, as well.
And then he
career high. Yeah.
And most of his scoring was in the first half of the season.
Yeah, and he really struggled in the final third.
Yeah.
This team should not be bereft of goal scoring at all.
No, they should. I mean, it's still scoring by committee.
Yeah.
But there's enough guys who can get you 20, 25 goals, you know.
If you can get 30 goal seasons out of Tippett, Konechny, and Forster.
Yeah,
I mean, you're north of 90 goals right there with just those guys.
Cates
can chip in a little bit. Brink can chip in a little bit. We haven't even mentioned Michkov and Drysdale.
Yeah, exactly. So, your Flyers aren't going to be an offensive juggernaut.
Nope.
But there should be enough offense there that you're not near the bottom. And maybe if you some guys pick up, you can be a little closer to that 18th in the league, somewhere about that.
Yeah,
I think that's a realistic goal. Getting your goals, certainly getting over three a game. You know, Flyers were kind of fluctuating over three a game and under three a game. And
I remember 2 years ago, Bill. I mean, geez, they needed like the planets to align to score a goal.
They weren't opportunistic. They weren't a team. They need one chance to get a goal. They need a lot of chances to score. So yeah, you get those guys in around 30, several guys at double digits. Frost, 20 goals, 40 assists would be a great season for him.
Yeah. Same kind of numbers, maybe 22 and 44 for a guy like Couturier.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, the thing, of course, with Coots was all scoring came before. We talked about that January 6th game. Mm-hmm. That was his last goal for a long time after that. He had 10 goals, I think, in his first 41 games as a 20 goal pace. And then it was a real struggle after that. As it turned out, he had the injury issues and whatever. When he missed those couple games in January.
Yeah.
And he was never the same again after that. He was really fighting it the rest of the season. You know, having him in the lineup obviously is huge, but having him healthy in the lineup for a whole season is huge as well. And that also helps you with matchups. It helps a lot of other things. It can help other people offensively, even if the numbers don't show up in Couturier's column. So, you know, there's a lot of things that have to come together. I'm curious. I don't want to put numbers on Michkov for his first year, but, you know, I'm wondering what he can do as a 19-year-old in the league. I don't want to set the expectations too high, but I think he can come in and make an impact pretty quickly. So
yeah, Bill, I don't want to put numbers on him either, but I'm going to eventually put numbers on him because I can't help it. You know what I mean? Okay, so last thing, Bill, for this episode, again, this is all me just sitting on the beach, toes in the sand, the whole thing, and just thinking. I'm just writing an email and notes to myself. So we just talk about that scoring and Forster, if he can get north of, close to 30 or north of 30, Tippett, same thing, and Konechny off signing the new deal, which won't go into effect until after next season. And I look back at when he signed his bridge contract, it was 19 going into 19-20. He had a great year when he signed a new deal. Sometimes people think you sign a contract, you get fat pockets, some guaranteed cash, and there's a little bit of sag. It wasn't the case with Konechny before, but I think about these amount of goals that they can score this year, and it's no singular reliance on one person. But then I think, okay, well, if you're going to score a lot of goals, are you going to be a team that gives up a lot of goals? And I look at this goaltending situation, and I go, okay, I mean, as we sit here right now, I'm assuming Erson's the number one, right? I think that he's the number one. But you almost have more urgency to find out what Fedotov is over what Erson is because of the age and the money you assigned Fedotov to, with 3.25 in a 2-year deal. I mean, how does this split kind of take place? I mean, you go, okay, he's our number one. He plays 3 out of every 4 games. I just don't think it works. I think it's maybe 1 out of every 3 or 1 every 2.8 is how it maybe like it plays out this year. Because I think you got to find out about Fedotov too, because he is not a young player.
Yeah. And he's on a 2-year too. So
yeah. And on the other side of that is unrestricted free agency.
Yeah. I think that little short spell at the end of the year, you couldn't go by that at all. I mean,
that would have been unfair.
That first game he played actually came in a pinch and whatever. I mean, that was playing off adrenaline. His first appearance went really, really well, and the other ones were a little bit rough. But I don't think you could judge by it.
And that coincided with the Montreal game. He got touched up in like that coincided with the team just being absolutely dreadful.
Yeah. So I don't know what he is. I still don't know what he is.
No clue.
And I think you need to know that. Going in, I would think it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 to 50 games for Erson, depending on how it goes.
Yeah.
And if it is a 50-32 split, that is enough. That is enough games where you have a little bit of a sense of what you have. And it's also you know, one of the things that can be unfair sometimes with the backup goalie, if he's only the guy going in the second half of a back-to-back,
yeah,
you know, it's your third game in four nights, and he hasn't started in 3 weeks, it's not fair to him. So I think that sometimes, you know, some the numbers can deceive you a little bit, but I think you need to know where they are. It's honestly a big question mark. With Ersin, it's a consistency thing. It's never a compete thing. We know he'll fight forever, and we know we'll put together stretches where he definitely plays like a number one goalie.
But he 12-3-1 at one point last year, right. 16 games.
Yeah, and he needs to just carry it through over a whole season. I think Ersin was pulled, you know, early a few too many. That's on him. I mean, if he was pulled, it was either because the score was getting out of hand or of course, Sam was having a rough night that night. I think every time he was pulled, I think it was justified. Yeah. But I like a few of those games this year. You know, the good games are encouraging and really nice to see. And, you know, I'd like if his save percentage is right around 90, again, that's not gonna do it.
No, it needs to be 912 or higher.
I think it has to be. It has to be. And again, I don't know what you're going to get from Fedotov, but at least 90% from him. If not, then it could be a long season again where, you know, it could be like the season before last, just in terms of goals against. You really need to solidify the position. Obviously, Carter Hart isn't available. And for the Flyers to get off to a good start, I think you're going to have to get good goaltending. I don't think there's any way. I don't think they're going to outscore it. We were talking about getting more scoring. I don't think you're going to outscore mistakes to where you dig yourself a hole and you're going to consistently pull out of it.
So. Yeah, I don't think they would score as much in track meet style hockey. No. I don't think that's trading chance hockey is going to be something that they're going to be good at. Even though they may score more this year, you know, by having guys step up their goal totals, you know, high-flying, high-scoring hockey games, to me, is not a recipe for them. I don't know that it's going to be low-scoring, you know, 2-1s like it was last year and the year before to some degree where they won a lot of really tight games. They went to Florida twice last year, won two games 2-1. They played some really low-scoring games, no margin for error. I remember talking about that at the beginning and the pressure that puts on a goalie. When a team's giving you two goals and you can only give up one to win. And they did it a lot, but it's a difficult way to live. They can't play track meet style hockey. So, well, we'll see how that plays out as well. Bill, great stuff. I'm going to continue to enjoy my week at the Shore. We'll be back Wednesday. Read Bill's work at PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com. And we'll talk to you coming up Wednesday from the beach on a brand new Flyers Daily.